Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Suave.
I've been in my bag for a while, I'm invincible. Story of a young boss grinding, shit get critical. Calling on my bros one time, cause you special. I had some hood dreams and right rounds for my mentor. Every target that I shoot is on point like a pencil. Different route, changed relationships, I'm so sorry. Came up from the trenches and I made it, I say hardly.
The tournament is here. Bet Online is your bracket headquarters for this season, with the best bracket contests out there, and odds, lines, and info on every game and every round, right up until the national championship. You can access the most up-to-the-minute wagering information anytime from your desktop or your mobile devices, and even track your bracket in real time all the way through the tournament. Head to BetOnline today and get in on all the action. Remember to use promo code BELIEVE, that's B-L-E-A-V, for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, the game starts here. All righty, guys. We are back with another episode of the What's In Your Bag podcast presented by BetOnline. As always, I'm your host, Andrew Robinson, and today we are joined by yet another special guest, somebody who we're going to get to in a little bit and give her the proper introduction that she deserves. But if you guys tune into the show every week, you know we got to get this business out of the way first. So if you're watching this on YouTube, go ahead and stop what you're doing. Give us a subscribe, you know, give us a thumbs up, tap that like button, drop a comment, give us some feedback. It goes a long, long way. If you're hearing this on Spotify, go ahead and like the show, follow the show, same thing. Give us some feedback. Give us a 5-star rating. Goes a long way in just getting this show out to the people who need to hear it. That was my guy, Pull Up Tay, on the intro, one of the hottest up-and-coming artists out of the DMV. It's going to be him on the outro as well. Make sure you guys are streaming his music, man. My guy's doing big, big things. But like I mentioned, guys, we are super, super excited for the guest that we have on today. This is somebody who is a good friends with another What's In Your Bag family member, Jody, who we had on a few weeks back. This is somebody who's super well-traveled in the industry, has a plethora of experience on the business side of basketball, playing, content creation, managing, PR. We're super, super excited to talk to her and just pick her brain today, guys. So, Victoria, thank you for coming on the show. Thank you for coming on the show today. We're pleased to have you on.
Of course. I feel bad that we probably could have made it happen sooner. But we appreciate patience. Thank you.
Yes. You know, good things come to those who wait. I mean, timing is great. Timing is great.
Honestly, the text you sent me with life is lifing is now going to be like my mantra. Life is lifing. I like that.
Listen, life is like, hey, it'd be like that sometimes. You know what I mean? But we roll with the punches. We roll.
That's a good one.
Obviously, me, you just got back from All-Star Weekend not too long ago. I got to run into you for a brief little second, but how has life been since then? I know I feel like everybody that I've talked to has kind of just been trying to get back to a normal schedule. I know for me, I barely slept, barely ate, was moving around. So what's the last week or so been like for you to get back to the normal routine?
Yeah, you know, I wish I could answer this differently and be like, I took a complete hiatus. I didn't speak to anyone. I didn't text anyone. I didn't do any work. But unfortunately, life's, and there was quite a bit of an events here in LA. Myself and a couple other basketball people in the industry were speaking. We're like, there should be a rule that there's 2 weeks off and no one can do anything, just a standstill after All-Star. But it is what it is. So this week alone, I had James Harden and Adidas shoe drop. So we did a game, and then there was like a cocktail official drop the following day in the Adidas office. And then yesterday, Dick's Sporting Goods had something. It was called Click on Dick's Sporting Goods. They released one of their new commercials and they had a little PR event in the city.
Yeah, yeah. Definitely keeping busy. Now, I know that you were at the Adidas event with Ashton, Jody, you know, Cassie was there, a bunch of folks. Mike, I saw that Ashton did a little recap video. I'm like, dang, all my friends were at this event. But how'd that event go? I think for us that are looking at it from the outside and, you know, we're seeing all these, everybody's having a good time, drinks going around, whatever, James Harden there celebrating his new shoe. But like, take us inside kind of what goes on at some of these events. Cause I feel like people see it and everybody's kind of taking their pictures. You might tag the brand and stuff like that, but it's like, what's going on? Like, what's the point of these events taking place?
I mean, Jody will agree with me, but Jody and I like have a different rating system than most, but most of the time our rating system consists of what kind of food or snacks they're serving. And I will say this, Adidas did a great job as far as beverage and food. So shout out Alan. But as far as it's not exactly you go and you're just hanging out with whatever players are there. Usually the player only shows up for maybe 20, 15 minutes of a 4 hour event, if that, and then just kind of like a swarm. So I think it's important for people to keep in mind there is a little bit more reality in it than just this like, oh, this is so cool. Everyone's going to hang out with James Harden type thing.
Now, what is your goal? Because I obviously, like I mentioned, I All-Star Weekend, there's a bunch of brands are doing events, activations, like even the parties at nighttime. Adidas threw a party at All-Star Weekend that was super dope. Do you have ever have like a goal when you're going to these events? Is it kind of just going there and like catch a vibe? Is it going there and network? Like, how are you
I mean,
approaching?
I always have a goal. I'm very blessed to receive a lot of invitations. So if I'm showing up to an event, it's either because I want to speak to someone who's there or it's a brand that I do a lot of work with already. So we're like unofficial coworkers and I feel the need to show love or show support because we've both been loyal to each other.
Right. Now, I find this dope, man, because I had this question planned for like later on in the podcast, but since we're already on the subject, may as well get into it
Yeah.
now. I feel like for somebody who's like trying to break into the industry, right, and trying to obviously you mentioned you're doing work with these brands, excuse me. So whether it's collaborations, campaigns, et cetera, right? So which then comes back on the back end with you being getting invited to some of these events. What would you say, when you first were kind of breaking into the industry, you know, what was like kind of trying to assimilate yourself into the industry so that you were able to attend these kind of events, whether it's networking or making contacts, connections? Like, what did you do when you first got out there? What was that experience like when you first started getting invited to these events? What were you doing? Was it kind of just a product of, you know, the campaigns and work that you were already doing? Or the kind of just, okay, hey, I know this person, he's a friend of mine, they're inviting me as a plus.
Right.
Like, how did that go when you first kind of made that transition to LA?
So I think one of the best things about what I do is I'm not necessarily official the biggest creator. And if you look at my page, that's not, I don't necessarily push content as a creator would. It's a little bit more on the business end. But of course, if there's a good situation that makes sense in the influencer realm, of course, I take it. But I'm really proud of myself because I've developed such a good relationship with brands through, I mean, there's quite a bit of full circle moments, but a lot of it, I played pickup or I did one project for one person and it led to me meeting someone or they witnessed me doing a good job and it parlayed into something more. I have a friend who works at Red Bull who him and I used to play pickup together in New York City maybe 8 years ago. When neither of us were anything, we were just still like barely out of college, just trying to hold on to the game. So there is a lot of instances like that, but I think I have a really good mixture of being involved or friends with the players, involved friends with the brands, or involved friends with the influencer and or looked like an influencer as far as like the numbers they want to see on social media or the posts they want to see moving forward.
Right. Now, what does that look like as far as like posts that a brand will want to see, or how will you kind of branding yourself on social media? Because at the end of the day, social media is it's personal and it could be outlet, but social media is also like your digital resume in a sense.
No,
Your
it really is.
social
It's
media is
become, that's
where
such a
you
good
brand
point.
yourself. So how are you
Yeah.
kind of showing up on social media to kind of, I guess, market yourself or target certain brands or whatever the case may be?
So I definitely, in the last 2 years, made a very hard switch of less personal things on my Instagram, at least. And it's a lot more brand-oriented industry posts. I would say a lot of people focus on followers and they don't need to. I think a lot of brands are now focused more on quantity and quality over quantity. And whether it's either views or, hey, you can hire someone who has a million followers, but A, some of those might be fake. And I think people catch on to that faster now. And they're just going to put a quick post up, do the bare minimum because they have so many things going on. Or I think even at the James Harden event, as you saw, that's like a lot of media. They had quite a bit of media, and you saw someone who, like Ashton, for instance, who might have a bit of a smaller following. Obviously, Switch Cultures has a huge following, but her personal page has a smaller. And she probably created one of the nicest creative videos that they saw of the event. So
Right.
I think brands do tend to look for that now a little bit more and try to get a mixture in the room.
Yeah. I think you actually bring up a good point too, because I feel like somebody like Ashley, you mentioned, right? Obviously, she's already getting invited to a lot of these events through Swiss Cultures and the media work that they've done. Shout out to Swiss Cultures for the brand that they built.
Shout out.
But when you said that, it made me think, right? Like, if you're somebody who maybe you're attending this brand as a plus one, or maybe you don't necessarily have the connections, but you get in the room, and then you make a little recap video like that. You put something together showcasing the vibes, showcasing the people in the room, right? You do a nice enough job, shoot, a brand might realize that and say, hey, dang, that was a cool video. Why don't you come to this event or do something like that for us? And that could also be a way that you can kind of use your social media as a smaller, I guess, creator or somebody who maybe doesn't have a large following to kind of get the attention of brands and things like that. So that was kind of something that I think could be a little bit of a tip for somebody who's also trying to, I guess, grow in the space and things like that.
Right, exactly.
I think that was a great point, but I kind of want to transition a little bit to your playing days, because before we knew Victoria Mazzio, the businesswoman, the entrepreneur, right, there was Victoria Cooper. Yeah. And I know you're a Philly girl through and through. You know, you grew up there and obviously played basketball at Chestnut Hill. So take me through those hooping days, kind of, growing up in the Philadelphia basketball tradition. I know just off the top of my head, I'm just scrolling through Twitter the other day and I'm watching highlights of the Philly Catholic League game between Roman
insane,
Catholic.
And insane.
It was like a crazy sequence at the end of the game. Mm-hmm. I know Roman, Newman Grady, there's so many schools down there that are super historic. So just talk to me about kind of those early days growing up in Philly and then the hoop culture that you kind of grew up around.
Yeah, so I actually moved around a fair amount as a kid, and I would say my substantial years of when you develop in basketball, which I think is around middle school. So, and I mean, that's a personal opinion, subjective, but I think like fifth grade, maybe ninth grade, I think are some of your more imperative years of shaping your game.
Yeah.
I was actually in Detroit, which I feel like Detroit and Philadelphia share the same game. So it was nice. It's both a grittier hustle. I would say like, not pass first, but you shouldn't be keeping the ball too long. It's not your Harlem Globetrotter. It's not your West Coast LA showy. Let's do all these crazy handles and then pass. It's, hey, you touch the ball, you're moving. Like, you're going to the next guy, you're slashing or you're shooting. There's no need to waste filler time, maybe as a point guard, but it was very much more old school, not flashy. Heavy on defense. And again, just a lot of hustle and heart. I think those were two of the things that just really stuck to me moving forward. And I think that helps now. But you will see a lot of similarities in my game as the way I do business. For instance, I think I'm just very tenacious, as well as I was always more of a selfless player. Even though I might have had the best shot on the team, I just felt like, hey, this person's so open. Why won't I give it up for one extra pass? I was always, let's do the extra pass. Let's make the easier bucket. You'll never see me on a breakaway and someone's coming to my left. And I was like, well, I could just take it myself. No, I will always be doing the last minute dish, even if it's a fake shot dish. So I think that helps as far as the agency brand perspective point of view. I will give so much money to my friends that are influencers. So much money. I will always put them on deals. And I'm so good at talking up people. And I think it helped in business. So on my team, I felt that I really just saw a lot of good in all the players. Even the coach didn't see it. And even now, I feel the people I work with or some of my friends that are influencers, I'm so good at singing their praises, which could come to my own detriment because maybe I don't do it for myself enough. But I really, like, I'm great at passing the ball. I'm great at making other people shine.
Love that.
And I'm great at just, like, putting my head down and grinding.
Love that. Now, if you take a scroll through your Instagram, you'll see a plethora of photos and footage of you hooping even recently nowadays.
I know.
What's that like now? Like, obviously I feel like if you're continuing to hoop at this point, like, you gotta have an extreme love for the game.
You know? No, my knees are begging me to stop. They're begging me to stop. Actually, this is my first year I had to chill a little bit because I play in the women's Drew and I'm fortunate enough to play on the best team. Okay, subjectively, but we've also, since I've been playing with them, only lost one game in 4 years. So it's not necessarily not necessarily that subjective. There are facts.
Oh, no.
No, I mean them. It's not me, but the team's really good. There's a lot of WNBA players mixed in, and I just feel like maybe I'm not quite at that level anymore. I'm not training consistently. I'm traveling a lot for work. Doesn't lead to being in the gym, getting shots up and dribbling. But I still enjoy it. The influencer games, the celebrity games are fun because it's not as serious. But the semi-pro leagues, like the Drew League, that might be coming to end sooner than later.
You gotta do the farewell tour like Kobe had.
Yeah, but Kobe, and I relate to him so much because I actually went to his last game in Philly. He was doing the same shit I'm doing. Like he was just 1 foot after over half, throw it up, why not? What's defense? Like, I get it because when you push your body, and I feel like LeBron's gonna find this out later, sooner or later too. Like once you push your body to the brink, and he's obviously an anomaly, it doesn't work the same. Like even now, I was so up until 2 years ago, I was used to being the fastest person on the court. So now when I get on court and I had to like kind of accept that I'm not the fastest, I don't know how to do that. Like, oh, this move isn't working for me like it used to. This is different.
That's
So.
funny. I feel like everybody gets to that point though, but I think it's good that you can still enjoy the game though, in any capacity. And I feel like as a hooper myself, like don't take that for granted. You know what I mean? Because some people, it's like they get out there, it's like, man, like you said, your body just doesn't work the same. So I feel like any opportunity to hoop, even if it's for fun, is like super special. You know what I mean? And you could always
No,
that
I
itch.
completely agree. But now it's like as fun as it is frustrating. It's like I'm just like, wait, why can't I do that anymore? I don't hate it.
That's funny. So I kind of wanted to ask you, right? Like, I think every hooper goes through this point where it's like, all right, when it's time to put the ball down and you're making that transition, into the real world, like, what was that process like for you? You know, when you decided to put the basketball down and get into the business side of things, right? Like, what was that tug and pull like, with that conversation? Like, all right, like, do I continue to try to play? Obviously, like, is it like a professional route? Is it like, do I just, I know for sure when this college thing is over, I'm getting to the real world. What was that like for you, kind of when you were first making that decision to put the basketball down?
I think, well, when I initially graduated college, I did have a few really weak overseas offers, and I feel like I should have taken them. They were very weak, and I wasn't on full scholarship all 4 years, so I had some debt accumulated. And I felt the best thing for me at the time was to make as much money as I could to get rid of some of this debt. Also, too, when you're done playing college basketball, not everyone, but I would say majority hoopers need a little bit of a break because to some extent it was very mentally and physically taxing. We all have different variants, but I think overall, especially when we played, when social media wasn't a thing, so you couldn't expose maybe toxic coaching behavior. Anything like that. It was just whatever the coach said, you did for 4 years, no matter what it was, right or wrong, your ass was getting killed. We all needed like a tiny bit of a break. So I got into pharmaceutical sales. I just thought it was the best way to make money. A lot of athletes are like, we get into that to make money. So pharmaceutical sales and medical device sales. I did that for 3, 4 years after college. And as I spoke about, I was on the East Coast. I had a Northeast territory. So I had everywhere from Philadelphia, New Jersey, and a tiny bit of New York. And it was well known that I would dip out of work. I did my job well. I usually did well. But Thursdays, whether it was Thursday or Wednesday, pretty much everyone knew that I was dipping out early to be at Rucker Park or Dykeman to play in what I thought was one of the more competitive leagues at the time for women. And some of my bosses were so cool with it. They're like, hey, we get it. You're ex-hooper. That's dope. Enjoy. I used to play pickup with some of the my coworkers at like sales conventions. But I remember one of them specifically was like, you're not a hooper anymore. You're in pharmaceutical sales. So you need to prioritize that. And I remember in my head just thinking, huh? No. Like, I'm a hooper first. I'm always a hooper first. If I want to go play, that's more important. They're like, basketball doesn't pay you. And I remember my parents constantly telling me I loved them to death, but they had no experience in a sports world. They both took a very traditional path. My dad, he's incredibly so smart. He got his PhD. He started working as a chemist. He's been in the same company for 15 years. He's just by the book. So they're both like, you're not going to make money in basketball. I just remember it just didn't sound right. It didn't sit right with me. So when I moved out to LA and I got laid off due to COVID, I was only out here for 3 months and I just relied on the game. I was like, you know what? I'll use my contacts in the game. I'll coach. I'll use the game for my income, for my network, for my friends, for pretty much everything when I moved to LA. And it didn't let me down. I was very fortunate. And now I can confidently say I make money in the game and it's not going to go away just because my knees don't work anymore. I'm in it.
I love
And
that. I love
nothing sounds better. And I low key wish I can go speak to that like sales manager. I don't even know what he's doing. I'm like, still Hooper, still in the game.
still in it. Still in it. I love that. So I want to talk about this because I feel like everybody has this dream of like, yo, I want to move to the bright lights of LA, Hollywood, and chase my dreams and make it happen. You know what I mean? And I mean, if you look at it, technically hindsight 2020, if you look at where you're at now, like you're doing it. You know what I mean? Like you got your own business, like you're attending the events, you're very much in the industry, you're traveling, right? But what people don't see or don't talk about is like what it takes to get there, uprooting your life in LA with no contacts and a place that's extremely expensive to live. You know what I mean? So talk about the early days when you first moved to LA. Like, how were you establishing yourself in the industry? How were you making ends meet? You know, what was that adjustment period like when you first got out there trying to acclimate yourself into the basketball community?
Well, I was never one of those people that really wanted to move to LA. I wasn't like, I want to be an actress or model. I never cared. I just got to the point where I felt like I exuded all my contacts and network. I just knew everything that I felt like I wanted to know in New York and Philadelphia. So I wanted a change. And I think, I don't know if it's a coach, someone once told me once you feel really comfortable, then you're not growing. So if you're just in a constant state of being comfortable and you're stagnant basically. So I had an opportunity. There was two territories open. One was in New Mexico, one was in LA. I love the ocean. So I was like, I might as well just go where the ocean is. Moved to LA, got out there 3 months into LA, right after getting a new apartment, my first one, got laid off. So there's no income cut off. It's not like I was saving in those 3 months during COVID really. You spend most of your paycheck trying, and opposed to moving home, which might have been the smarter option. I just really heavily relied on a few contacts I made in those 3 months, or maybe people that I've dealt with in the past through basketball. And I hit up everyone. I was fortunate enough. One of my friends who I helped with a couple charities knew someone who needed a coach in Long Beach, did the coaching gig. I knew Phil Handy from when I hooped in college, so it was really nice. He was able to put me on a few things. Met a world peace. He was the one that was holding the pickup games they were playing. He was able to help facilitate a couple projects for me, and it just kept growing and growing and growing. And I mean, those first 7 months, I would say, without my job, without my corporate job, I was probably working four or five odd jobs. Just making it work. Maybe my work day looked like 8 a.m. till 3 a.m. almost every day. And I was so scared I'm not gonna be able to make rent. A lot of times I didn't have enough time for like proper meals or enough money, I should say, for proper meals. So I got really fortunate. Some of the events I'd go to, some of the modeling gigs, they would all have snacks. I would always load up on the snacks. Always. And I am very fortunate that I was able to get out of the state of survival mode, but being in survival mode when I never really was in that. I think now looking back at it, when I was on the East Coast, I was so protected and I had no idea. I had family, I had friends, I had people I've known since high school, teammates I played with in college. Everyone was so well-intentioned and just genuine. And I had such a big bubble, and it's a lot easier to expand your bubble once you have a core, which is something we spoke about. And when I came out here, I didn't have a core, so I was constantly trying to latch on to things to try to make this core or this stability bubble for myself. And I might have trusted the wrong people initially and fell on my face a couple times, but eventually things started to stick. And I'm very fortunate now that the people I work with, I no longer have to take money just because I need to pay a bill. I can pick and choose who I work with. I've been out here almost 4 years now. I have a great group of people that I genuinely trust that are also in the industry that I can work in linear ways, which I love. And it's good. But the first couple of years, it wasn't easy. And if my daughter was asking me about it, I would do everything I could to not make her go through what I went through. But as I was saying, I don't have kids, but if I did have kids and they wanted to go through my journey, I wouldn't let them because I know how hard it was and I wouldn't wish that upon anyone. But it makes you stronger. And again, going back to basketball, I think that grit and hustle and tenacity shows through over and over again.
100%. So you mentioned like when you first got out there, like you're in survival mode, you're just trying to make it work, and kind of like you're fast forward to now, it's like you were able to kind of choose the jobs you take and obviously make things work for yourself, right? Do you remember the first time you felt like you had your head above water, like when things kind of started to change? What was kind of, I guess, the opportunity, or do you remember just having, I guess,
Yeah, I know exactly
what
what
that
opportunity
breakthrough
was.
opportunity was for you when things started to shift when you first got to LA?
I was actually debating. Well, the issue is I moved during COVID. So a lot of things that would make people money normally, especially in my industry with events, games, etc., were all completely shut down. But the first time I felt like I could breathe and I had my head above water and I could maybe afford to pay my rent, feed myself all month, and maybe get a cute new pair of shoes or something. That was nuts. I actually didn't go shopping my first 2 years. As someone who made a fair amount of money after college and was able to travel and do whatever they want, going from a hot, like a fairly decent six-figure job to being in LA and just really hustling, it was quite drastic. But it was, I got put on T-Max Tour, OBL. And I don't think I ever told him. I should tell him one day, but it really changed things for me as far as it took me out of danger zone. It allowed me to stay in LA. It allowed me to really perpetuate everything I was working on. And it was one of my big breaks.
That's awesome. Do you know Jessica Slate?
Yeah, of course.
We had her on the podcast. That's our girl, man. He was talking about
Yeah.
OBL. It was small
We
world.
were both on tour. We were both on tour together.
That's
It
fire.
was just me and Casey. I don't know if you had her on, but us three, we were at every city, every game.
That's fire.
And it was the first time too I've ever been on a tour, like an actual tour. So it was, you'd come home Tuesday or Monday, and then you'd have 2 days, and then they'd fly you out to the next city, and it would start over again. And yeah, it was definitely road life.
Now, you mentioned we were talking off air kind of about getting the opportunity to work with T-Mac, in the OBL, and you mentioned how he's one of your favorite players, like to watch growing up. What was it like, kind of being able to work with him up close, and have him be a part of your daily life? You know what I mean? As not just like this mythical figure, like damn, like that's T-Mac, but like now this is like a coworker and somebody who you're constantly doing business with, and somebody who I imagine would turn into a friend over time.
Yeah, it was really surreal. And T-Mac's a huge family guy. I don't know if that's been portrayed in his countless articles or interviews, but he's a huge family guy. He has an amazing wife, amazing children. His daughter just turned 21, and she's like a little sister to me. I love her. It was really surreal. And I think I told you one of my biggest full circle moments is one of an off thing I did was I did some print work with Adidas. So we did a little commercial shoot with Adidas gear and sneakers. And whatever we signed basically said they can use it wherever, whenever. We don't know when it's going to pop up. So I probably did that about 6 months prior to working with T-Mac. And then he got on the cover of Slam. And one of our ads actually showed up in that same magazine. So he was able to see it and he signed that magazine for me. It was just huge, full circle. Cool moment, and I was like, ooh, things are piecing together. I can breathe. This is good.
Yeah, that's fire. To being a first of all, to be in Slant Magazine is tough, but to be in there with T-Mac is crazy. Like,
And to be working with him at the exact time, like I just
exactly,
happened,
is crazy.
even when he got an early magazine, Like he got it early, and we just happened to be, I don't even know what city we were in, but we were in one of the 101 gyms. He's like looking at it, and I was like, oh my gosh, look, I'm on the very back cover. Like that's crazy.
That's love. So I feel like when you kind of look at, I guess, that moment in time, right? When you're first starting to get your head, above water, right? And then you're starting to turn, you know what I mean? And I guess even now, right? Because you mentioned, I feel like one thing that I'm thinking about, right? You're thinking about, well, if I had a daughter, like I would never let her go through that. The things that I went through coming to LA with her life, you know what I mean? But now looking at it in hindsight, it's like, all right, like it kind of worked out for me. You know what I mean? How do you reflect back on that decision? How do you reflect back on that period? All the things that you kind of had to go through in order to get to where you are now. Would you say that, like, some people are like, you know what? Yeah, what's up? But I would do it all over again. Some people are like, you know what? I don't know. You know what I mean? How do you reflect back on that decision initially to make that choice and uproot your life?
It's so hard because you definitely take a mental hit. Even just take everything away, but even just putting yourself out there on social media is a decision that's gonna affect your mental health. And I wish people who just went on social media and want to be social media famous maybe took that into account a little bit more. But even just that, like you're gonna get way more hate than average because you're exposing your life and judgment of maybe people that you already knew, that your friends, schoolmates, whatever, and you're now putting that in realm of thousands of people to judge, snip clips of your life and just put it out there. I'd like to say it was worth it. I would also like to think that this was my fate or destiny or this was God's plan regardless. So I would hope that even if I stayed in Philly or New York City or didn't come to LA, I would somehow find myself in a similar position. So it's hard to say, like, yes, it's completely worth it moving to LA, getting my ass kicked 100 times. But I'm proud of where I am now, that's for sure.
Now, another kind of cool full circle moment that we kind of touched on was your experience working now with Jameer Nelson, with your agency and the things that you're doing with him
Oh,
now.
yeah.
Come a full circle back from Philly. I don't want to give too much of the story because I want you to be able to tell it,
Yeah.
but just talk about, I guess, that interaction, that encounter, and what you guys' relationship is like today, having that kind of full circle moment.
Yeah. So one of my favorite things is bringing the brand awareness and social media information I've learned over the years being out here back to the East Coast and Philly, because Philly isn't as industry focused, obviously. They're very blue collar, corporate, just a low key city. It's not LA, bright lights. Everyone has been on a commercial. Everyone's done a reality TV show. Everyone has a high social media following. So when I was younger, I used to beg a basketball trainer, his name is Drew Hanlon, to give me shooting advice. And this was at the beginning of his career as well. And basically, we came to an arrangement that I'd rebound for hours sometimes, some of his players, and he would then help me out for like 10 minutes afterwards and do some shooting coaching. And at the time, I thought he was one of the best, and I thought it was completely worth it. So, Jameer Nelson is one of those people I'd rebound for endlessly, and he would put a lot of shot love, a lot in a non-air conditioned gym. And I was about 19, 20 at the time. And I started doing some things more in Philly and with the Sixers. And he is obviously the GM of the Blue Coats now. And he also works with the Sixers. He's done a really good job with his career. And we got reconnected again, not like 8 years later. And now I work with him on his brand and PR management. And it's just really full circle.
That's
But
awesome.
I think part of the reason he felt comfortable with me and I trusted him, obviously, is because he's already seen, even if it was just in basketball, how hard I'm willing to work for an end result.
I think one of the common themes that I always hear on the podcast, but that I think is obviously another recurring subject here in our conversation, is that just the relationships. You know what I mean? You mentioned like Phil Handy, and you know him kind of from your college days. And I know you're working with him now, and you know, Jameer Nelson kind of taking it back to Drew Hanley, and now you're working with his PR. I think at the end of the day, it's crazy to just hear how all these relationships can kind of come full circle and manifest
Yeah.
themselves in real life. You already mentioned also too about like Meta World Peace. I know he's also somebody who's kind of close to you and somebody who you worked with when you kind of were new to LA and things like that. What can you say about, I guess, the idea of this relationship? Is there kind of one relationship that kind of sticks out to you where it's like, dang, man, like meeting this person or coming in contact with this person really like changed my life? I feel like some people it's like, yo, if I wouldn't have ran to this person at this time, who knows where my life would be? Or this
Yeah.
person really introduced me to somebody that showed me something or taught me something. You know what I mean? Like, at the end of the day, people always say, like, you know, relationships, relationships, relationships. Those are the most
Yeah, for
important things. You
sure.
know what I mean? And I
For
always
sure.
remember hearing people's stories on kind of how their relationships and their career have manifested and helped them kind of get to where they are today.
Yeah, I mean, I think I have a couple. You named some. Phil Handy, T-Mac, Meta. I have a couple people that aren't NBA players, that have just really held me down. Because where I'm navigating is such a gray area. No one's really in there. So it's really hard to ask advice on a path or a blueprint on a path that no one else has taken.
Yeah.
I think there's a quote that I just love is there's no traffic when you make your own lane.
Facts.
But the same thing that comes with that is there's also no blueprint or exact advice. But I have a friend, Sharon, who's really helped me. Jody has been amazing. We really lean on each other because we deal with a lot of the same stuff. She's also creating her own path. So that is one of my biggest blessings from God, I think. I also have another friend, Keys, who does a lot of photography on the East Coast for like the Sixers and the Nets. So whenever I'm out there, we work in tandem. But just all these people have been so great as far as like your unofficial coworkers. They've put me on, they've helped me, they believe in me. There's zero judgment and just complete and utter support. And finding that in the industry is so hard.
Yeah, not that. I think building genuine relationships in the industry is something that is, especially in a living in a city like LA, where I feel like sometimes things can be super transactional, where it's like, hey,
It's
I'll
very
open up, we'll meet this
transactional.
week. You know what I
Yeah.
mean? I've got to be something on the other hand. So I think it's super important to try to manifest those relationships, you know, organically and kind of just also not always have your hand out, but be able to offer somebody something as well. You know what I mean? But I wanted to ask you, like, based on what your knowledge is now and your experience now in the industry. And you also obviously with your agency, you're doing PR, you're doing marketing, you're connecting people with brands, influencing, right? What is some advice you would say to somebody listening to this on how they can build their own platform or build their brand online? You know, obviously you yourself have, you know, built a lot of following on Instagram and stuff like that. You've worked with athletes on trying to market themselves and things like that. What are some things that you think athletes or creators could do if they're trying to grow their brand online and monetize and you know be able to work with brands, you know, in the future?
Yeah, I think two things. Well, just in business in general, I actually think three things. One thing is find your niche. Don't try to be something you're not. So, for instance, I'm in basketball not because I thought it was cool and saw someone else do it and saw they had a lot of following. So I was like, let's try this. No, this has just been ingrained in me since I was five. I've never loved anything more than the game. And
Yeah.
I'm so fortunate now to be around the game in a different capacity where I don't have to necessarily play just to be around it.
Yeah.
And for that, I'm always grateful for. My second is I think mentorship's really important. So if there is someone that you think is great or you want to do something similarly, I think offering to work for them for free or at least just offer help to learn from them because it's not necessarily for free if you're learning knowledge, which can be invaluable, honestly.
Yeah.
And then my third thing is too, if you feel like there's these giant brands, Adidas, Nike, Jordan, or amazing people like Jeannie Buss, Michael Rubin, if you want to work with people like this, which I'm fortunate that these are all people in my contact list. you need to be able to not just ask for things, because those are all brands and people you can ask a lot of things from, even players, name whatever NBA player. Don't go to them asking for something. Show how you can also be of value to their life. So add, like, that's one of my biggest life lessons I always stick by, is how can I add instead of subtract?
Right. So I think, I'm glad that you said that. And I think where my mind goes next is like, okay, like, how are you approaching those conversations? Like, you know, Victoria, right? If you're talking about somebody like a Michael Rubin or a Jeannie Buss, and you're like, all right, you know, I'm trying to connect with this person, right? I know that I can add value based on my experience, based on the line of work that I do, right? How are you approaching that conversation? Because I think you can be in rooms where you might see somebody and be like, dang, like, that's a really important connection that I could make, right? But now the question is, all right, how do I approach it? What do I say? How can I, you know, approach this person where it's not like, hey, like you mentioned, what can you do for me? But how can you, I guess, approach it in a way that you can let it be known the things that you can do and offer your services? But I guess most of it is navigating that conversation, right? Like, how do you yourself in your work kind of handle those situations?
I think it's a very fickle system.
Yeah.
And it's a lot of trial and error. Sometimes,
yeah.
I don't even say that I would have the best approach always, but I will say this. I think if you just are meeting someone for the first time, you never have a business conversation. That's my thing. That's one of my like unspoken rules. I don't know if there's merit to it, but just for me, if I'm meeting someone for the very, very first time, I've never had any interaction with them whatsoever. And that's, we've never DM'd, we've never talked, we're just getting introduced. There's no way I'm going up to them and being like, hey, I'm doing this. That being said, if I'm just meeting someone for the first time and we happen to be hitting it off and we're having more than a 15-minute conversation and we're now passing the surface level stuff, I don't mind being like, hey, I followed you. I've seen you do this stuff. Have you ever thought about doing this? That's okay. But
yeah.
I think sometimes it can come off a little aggressive if you just run up to, for instance, the Adidas thing, James Harden was the man of the hour.
Yeah.
I think it would be crazy to run up on him and be like, hey, your shoe's cool, but what if you did this? Like, that'd be insane.
Yeah.
So I think it's just a lot of give and take. I won't say who, but I have like a pretty cool story where I was around someone 3 or 4 times and I always noticed them. I won't say if they noticed me or not, because they were a really big name.
Yeah.
But they were having their own event. It was a premiere for something, and they were like one of the biggest people coming into the room.
Yeah.
And I remember their drink order. So because I've been around them quite a bit, even though they might have not noticed me. So when they got into the room, I had the server bring them a mix of the 3 drinks that they always get. And I went over to them. I was like, hey, I know you're about to get swarmed, but I just had one of the servers make sure you have your 3 drinks that you like usually. So at least you'll have a drink in your hand when everyone approaches you. And they were shocked. They were like, whoa. And then since then, we were able to really be locked in, and just like little observant moves like that, I think really helps.
Hey, that's a pro tip right there. Full cap, like, sheesh. But I think one of the key things that you said is like, you were around this person 3 or 4 times, you know what I mean? And you kind of let it marinate over time. Like you mentioned, you didn't just pull it right away and go in for the kill, you know what I mean? But I think that's fire, you know what I mean? That's fire. So like, I guess my next question would be, in your line of work, when you're, let's talk about, you know, Victoria's like the agency, right?
Yeah.
When you're trying to acquire new clients, right? Is that more so like a word of mouth thing? Are you yourself going out there and pitching your agency?
No, all word of mouth. Unless it's someone, for instance, Jameer. I've known him for 10 years, low-key.
Yeah.
And that's someone I could be like, hey, buddy, like, let's figure this out, because you don't even have a blue check right now.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think it's a lot of word of mouth. I'm getting a lot stricter on who I work with. Not all money is good money. That's another lesson I had to learn. Not all money is good money.
Mm.
And not all clout is good clout. And just because someone's famous or rich does not mean it's going to be a good partnership moving forward.
Wait, can we expound upon that a little bit? Because I feel like we need to get, like, that's a bar. That's a bar. But I want to hear more about why you say that.
I mean, I think obviously I won't go into details or names, but there's like a lot of people sometimes because they are at a certain status. I think maybe the respect levels are less for other people, or they're already rich, they're already famous. And a lot of times to get to levels like that, you have to have quite a big element of selfishness. So sometimes if you're the person that's trying to work with them, it's not always in your benefit, even if they are paying you.
Yes.
It might be taking away from other things. I've
Yes.
had better, even, and that can go along with brands. Adidas and Nike are some of like, they really don't need to pay people too much because they are such a big brand and people are willing to work with them.
Right.
Where you can get a smaller brand, like I know a lot of NBA guys are going with Puma or Skechers just signed some really big deal. I guarantee you they're making a lot of money. Maybe not LeBron Nike money, but all the other Nike players underneath where there's less money because they have such big players. Yeah, I think it's important to remember that sometimes the smaller brands or the smaller players or just people in general that you wouldn't consider the famous ones can actually be way more beneficial to a business than a powerhouse.
Yeah. Shout out T-Man and Julius Randle with the Skechers, man. I seen that. I said,
Yeah.
my boy playing chess, not checkers.
No, seriously, people are probably like, oh, Skechers, like that's not the coolest brand, but there is money in that. There's money. And there's also creative freedom, which is cool.
No, facts. So one thing I'm going to ask you, right? Because we were talking a little bit about this off air just now, is like your schedule, right? And you got
Yeah.
Philly game, Lakers, this and that. Like travel, you know, is crazy. So
Yeah.
I'm trying to have a look into what your, I guess, give us a week, you know, a normal business week for you, when it might be the traveling, the calls, the scheduling, clients. Like, what did that look like? Because again, I think people will look at your Instagram and they'll be like, dang, V, like, that's dope. You're at this Adidas party.
Yeah.
You're at Dick's, you're at All-Star Weekend, then you courtside the Lakers game, then you live in life,
Yeah.
you know what I mean? But they might
Yeah.
not understand the things that go in on the back end to kind of make that stuff happen.
I'll say this, and I don't know if I've ever said this out loud, like on camera. So I can't remember the last time I watched an NBA game for fun. I watched WNBA games for fun, but I can't remember the last time I generally sat from like a first quarter to a fourth quarter and just thoroughly enjoyed a game as a fan. I think sometimes when you get too deep in the industry, you lose that privilege a bit. So almost every NBA game I'm at, there is a business element to it, unfortunately, even if I don't want there to be. I will say this, Philly games are a little bit more fun for me just because that's like the hometown. I have people who watched me play when I was 14 years old. And I love it. That's actually one of my favorite things because Philly doesn't really care about famous people or clout or social media. So I love when the guys come up to me, they're like, V, I remember your dumbass took that charge. And like, we never thought you were going to get up. Like, and they're like, and now people are asking for autographs. Like, what is this? This is bullshit. Like, do they not know you're like just this little feisty girl? And I like love it. I really love that because I feel like I'm really, really seen. So that's fun. But yeah, most of my schedule, for instance, I had to be an all-star. I would like to say that I try if I do, if I'm traveling for 2 weeks, I try to try take at least a week or two off where I'm back in LA, I'm just doing emails. I'm not really taking any in-person meetings. When I'm on the road, that's when I'm working. So in January, I had to go to Paris for Paris NBA. Came back, did two Philly games, one New York game, had to go to Orlando because Jameer was getting honored, which is cool. That was actually a really fun experience to witness. I think because I love the game, work and play are able to mix. But again, I think people see how cool it looks and are not considering that it's work. And then I came back for 2 weeks, rested, had my birthday, then we had Super Bowl, All-Star. Just tried to take a week off, but I told you what my schedule looks like this week. So you're in LA. I'm purposely not going to the game tonight because I need a break. And then next week, I have a New York game, two Philly games. Saturday, I should be at the Lakers game as well. So that's what we look like.
Super busy. Now, we had one of my homies on a couple months ago. His name is Sonny Piplani. He's kind of in the manager space. He does a lot of stuff for Udonis Haslem. He's like Udonis Haslem's main guy off the court for managing. And he does some stuff with like leaning and Dwayne Wade, all that kind of stuff. And he was talking about, he was like, yo, like, I kind of have like a strategy when I go to basketball games, like if I'm working with UD or whatever. He was like, the first and the fourth quarter, I'll like watch, 'cause that's kind of like the interesting parts of the game when it
That's
first.
literally,
But
I
like, third
watched
quarter,
the.
yeah, halftime and third quarter, I'm like talking to somebody, I'm networking, I'm whatever the case may be. So, like, for you, when you're at these games on business, right? Like, is it more so just talking to people and making connections? Are you kind of there supporting a client just who may be playing? Like, what does that look like for you when you're attending the game?
Most of the time, it's both. I don't do anything if it's just one side, unless I'm getting paid a lot of money. There has to be like at least two or three reasons to be in a place, to travel somewhere. That's kind of how I operate. So while it's, hey, I'm checking in on someone I already work with, slash I'm connecting with someone else I've had a bunch of conversations with, but we might not be at the dotted line yet. But I just want to strengthen that relationship. And then thirdly, like I just want to check my parents on, I love them. Like just
Yeah.
multiple facets. I think my favorite memory of all working in basketball, since I like am more on the business side, not playing, is bringing my dad and my uncle, who just beat cancer, to a Sixers game. It was honestly, my dad is so confused with what I do because, as I said, he's very by the book. He was never that big into basketball, which is also funny. So to bring him to a game, and then it was a Lakers Sixers game, which, as you know, I work with Phil. I've worked with a couple different Lakers. I've worked with a couple different Sixers. I know a lot on both teams. So to have both coaches and players coming up, and I'm just like, oh, and this is my dad, and my dad's just like, what? Like, why are they coming up and saying hi to you? I'm like, dad, like, you know I work in this stuff. Like, what? But it was, he was like flabbergasted, and he was so cute. He came back to my mom and was like, do you know Victoria is like famous? My mom's like, she's like, I kind of knew, but like I got to get him on the court. Everyone came and said hi to him. It was really nice. It's my favorite moment. Him and my uncle were talking about it all the way from Thanksgiving to Christmas. Like all my cousins were like, they were not stop talking about it. So that was my favorite moment of being in the industry.
That's awesome. That's awesome. I think it's always dope when you can provide your family and your parents with those, like, those kind of opportunities that they wouldn't otherwise have, you know what I mean? Access and stuff like that. I've had this conversation with, I know Jody when she came on the podcast and a bunch of other people, but also Jessica Kamir, we were talking about this in the other week. And it was like, it's crazy because I feel like some of the best, so like obviously me and you, we got something in common being just East Coast folks, and I'm a Maryland.
East Coast Hoopers, yeah.
If you're Pennsylvania, Philly, and stuff like that, like, and we talk about me. I'm trying to like move to LA eventually and kind of start my career and at the basketball and everything. And I remember when I was first coming to LA, it was like, all right, like, so I was there for 6 weeks because my twin brother worked for the Clippers. And it was like, oh, this is great. And I remember I met so many people, made so many connections, and it was awesome. And then this past holiday, I was there for like 10 days between Christmas and New Year's, and like. I can remember when I was planning my trip. I'm like, all right, first of all, I was supposed to be there for 7 days, but I ended up extending it for 7 days and moved my flight. But I was like, all right, I'm gonna be there for 7 days. How can I fit the most amount of like networking and meet the most people into a 1 week period as I possibly can? And it's crazy because like Victoria, when I got out there, I went to like three Clippers games when I was out there in like a week. And that was like the best networking that I could have ever done was simply going to a basketball game. And like talking to people, getting there. I get every single game. I got there an hour and a half early. So because of my brother, I was able to get the family pass and be on the baseline. So I'm meeting different photographers or agents or managers, and like just meeting new people on the baseline and going in the back hallways and kicking in the media room after. And then Ashley ended up having like a Switch Culture networking event at one of the games, so I got to go to the suite and meet all these even more people. I'm just like, yo, it's crazy the amount of people you can. At a basketball game or at a basketball event, you know what I mean? Like it's wild. Like you don't have to go no crazy seminar or no. It's like you pull up to a basketball game, you never know who you might run into and who you might meet and the connection that you can foster just over the game. And I feel like just from the outside looking in, hearing your story and just listening to the things that you kind of said about how your career has unfolded, It seems like you've kind of had a similar experience. You're meeting people through the game or at a pickup run or in a gym. You know what I mean? So I kind of wanted to ask you about that, you know, just the community of basketball, the networking of how the game has been able to, I guess, open up so many doors for you from a networking perspective just by simply being in a gym. You know what I mean?
I mean, it's been, again, it's been everything for me. I would be nowhere without the game. All my contacts in the industry were game related, so there would literally be nothing. That's what it is, and I'm so grateful. And I think it's just important to remember your character. There's a lot of people who I play pickup with who would throw balls and yell at each other and try to fight people, and you just never know who's watching. And always think bigger, because unfortunately, there's a very, very small percentage who make it to the WNBA and NBA, but there's lots of ways to be around the game. So just, I would say, always uphold yourself to some kind of standard, even when you're playing pickup and get frustrated. Like, I think it's still best not to maybe yell in someone's face if you can avoid it.
Wow, that's a big facts. You never know who's watching.
You never know who's watching. You never know what could be the next opportunity. And I, again, like, some of my biggest deals I've made are with completely non-famous basketball. It's definitely basketball related, but it's not with like who you think it should be.
One of the questions that just popped into my head when you're talking about like deals that you're brokering for your clients or things like that, right? Obviously, you're having a bunch of conversations, and like I mentioned, you're obviously influencing yourself, and then also on the behalf of your clients, things like that. What are some of the main things that brands look for, right? When they're reaching out to you and say, "Hey, we're looking for somebody for this campaign, right? Or we're trying to look for a player or influencer for this thing, right?" What are some of the main things that brands are looking for in creators or in athletes? In order to, you know, for creators from different perspective to make some money or things like that. Like, I'm always curious. I never asked anybody that, but I'm always curious, I guess, what do you think are the main questions that brands are asking? What are the main qualities that they're looking for so people can kind of better position themselves for these kind of opportunities?
They're looking for engagement. They're also looking what type of people follow you. So, for instance, if a brand is trying to sell, I don't know, basketballs, for instance, they're not going to reach out to a fashion blogger. Or Prada's new line isn't necessarily, I mean, you are seeing, that's why I'm like holding my tongue. Because, for instance, like Kylie Kelce just went out to Fashion Week because they are testing out these crossroads. So there's a lot of crossroads, but overall, I think brands are looking, they're going to have a following that makes sense for their brands, and engagement, and easy to work with, and timeliness. I've seen influencers lose a relationship with a brand just like that because they decided to be a diva or refused to do something because they thought they would look stupid, even though they already agreed. So I think, again, just be mindful and always just be polite to as many people as you can.
Yeah, love that. So, what advice would you give, right? Knowing what you know, to somebody who may be watching this episode right now, right? They're tuning into the pod and they're like, you know, I want to be Victoria Mazzeo one day. Like, what advice would you give to that person on, I guess, navigating this space and carving out a lane for themselves?
I think I would just be like, never listen to the noise and just keep going. I think it's a lot, it's much easier for people to be negative or doubt something they haven't seen. So I think just believe in yourself stronger than anyone else does and continue. Because even my parents, they love me to death and they're so supportive, but they still like would question the vision sometimes and be like, why would we leave a six-figure job with gas card and a car for this shit again?
Listen, it's okay. As long as you see the vision, that's all that
But
matters.
it's nice now, again, like 4 years later, to be able to bring my dad to a game, favorite moment ever, and him just like, oh, you're like a
This is what
thing. This is a
you
thing. Yeah, like.
That's fine. So my question for you, Victoria, is you've obviously came a long way, right? From hooping to working in the pharmaceuticals to getting out the mud to try to make ends meet. And now you're at a place where, you know, you're here, right? But What is next for you, right? Like, do you have anything where it's like, dang, down the line, like, this is what I'm aspiring to build. This is what I'm trying to grow
Yeah.
to. Like, what does that look like for you?
I think next is I never want to put anything in a box. So next is whatever opportunities come my way and I can reach for and grab and succeed at. I rarely say no to new things and I th take a lot of risk, which I think has helped me get to where I am. But yeah, definitely focus a little more on my own brand a bit, which we talked off air. One day I'll stay on air, but so just working on things a little on my own brand, and I have a genuinely good group of people on retainer and rotation, and it provides more consistency in my life than I've had in a while, and just continuing to grow with that those people.
Love that. So last question I have before we have some fun, ask a couple quick hitters and let you enjoy the rest of your day, is
Okay.
I think one of the things that is growing now is so prevalent is like these athletes that are multidimensional and multifaceted, and they're getting into so many different things, whether it be fashion, influencing, photography, like all these different areas outside of the game. And I feel like, you've kind of been a part of that era that's seen that go from like where that was like a big no-no, where it was like you got to be basketball only, to now where a lot of people are doing a different things and are very multifaceted in a bunch of different areas. And obviously, you're
For
somebody
sure.
who's working with a bunch of NBA players now in PR and brand development and marketing, et cetera. What can you say about, I guess, what message would you send to any like athlete or player out there maybe thinking like, dang, like it's not cool to post content or it's not cool to, focus on things that are outside of the game, right? As somebody yourself who's, a creator, a business owner, an entrepreneur, still in your hooping
No,
bag.
I actually love it, and I think that's why I have a job. It's like these people who want to start a podcast or do a fundraiser or do a nonprofit, and I love it. I mean, there's so many hoopers right now with podcasts, WNBA and NBA, and I'm just like, okay. I mean, because as you know, as hoopers, we can talk. Like we can talk, and most hoopers, I feel like, have a little wit to them. Like we've been talking shit and making jokes since we were five. Why not broadcast that further? Also, too, even if it's something that's unconventional, that's not podcast, or all hoopers want to be rappers and vice versa, like maybe you want to start dancing or own a zoo, like whatever your dream is, I think you just should just pursue it. And I don't think it's human nature just to be obsessed and know one thing. I mean, we all have so many layers and facets to us. Why not explore it?
I love
And
it.
worst case, you fail. Worst case, you fail. Okay, cool, move on. Like,
I'm loving this era. I'm loving where it's going, and I'm excited to continue to kind of see the next
yeah.
new thing, next new wave of kind of what these players are doing. But got a couple quick hitters for you, and then we'll go ahead and wrap it up. So the first question I have for you, right, is, given that you're an East Coast, born and raised, and West Coast more recently. You had to choose one, East Coast vibes or West Coast vibes. What are you
Oh, don't do
choosing
that.
and why?
Okay, I am taking the West Coast weather. I'm also taking the West Coast way of life. I feel like more people out here kind of like cheat coded life as far as it's always summer. No one has a real job. Everyone's making a lot of money. Everyone's just happy. Not everyone, but there's a lot of those vibes out here. And I'm taking the East Coast family morals. I'm taking the East Coast grit. I'm taking the East Coast Italian food because I don't mess with Italian food out here on the West Coast. I'm taking the West Coast sushi and tacos. And I don't know, I think I used to talk a lot of shit in about LA, and I've changed my mind as far as both have a lot of good things to offer. You just have to look at the glass half full.
See, I love the answer, but you didn't choose. You
I know, but that's
just
why I don't choose anymore. I used to. I used to choose, but like, why choose? And this, like, literally the mantra of my life is why choose when you can have both? Like, why do I have to choose the West Coast now? Even though I live here, this is my residence, and I'm gonna live on the beach and have the be I'm gonna go on a beach walk after this and have the best day. But I also get to go home now once a month, see all my people, enjoy a good cheesesteak, Italian food, see my parents. Like, why do I have to choose when I can live, have the best of both worlds?
Okay, that's fair. That's fair. But I'm glad you brought up the cheesesteak. Now I gotta ask
Cheesesteak.
you, best cheesesteak in Philly. You know what I mean? Because I've been to Pat's, I've been to Gino's. I might be a couple more on the ground.
It's Delejandro. Delejandro's.
Alejandro's best cheesesteak in Philly.
Alejandro's.
Okay, I'm up.
Like, for sure. And only locals will say that for the most part.
Okay, I'm gonna write that in the notes for sure. I gotta go tattoo it down
Yeah,
there.
Alejandro. Hey, listen, hit me up. I mean, Jordan from Swish Cultures, he was in Philly for a day and I made his ass go there with me. You have to like pay cash, free green. I've corrupted so many people. T-Jazz. All these random people, anytime they're in Philly, I make sure they get Alessandro's cheesesteak. I tell them how to order it. It's with. Don't waste anyone's time. You get a birch beer, and that is a true Philadelphia order.
All right, say less. So when I'm in Philly, I'm on the phone like you're
Yeah, I got you.
bet. All right. So favorite restaurant in LA that you go to now?
You know what? I really love going to the Strand House. It's
What's it
in
called?
Manhattan Beach, the Strand House.
Okay.
It's in Manhattan Beach. It has a beautiful ocean view, and usually restaurants that have an ocean view have horrible food. But the food's really good. I just like the vibes. I like the alcohol. They have really good cocktails. They have great food. One that's not as bougie. Let's see. What do I get a lot that I just love? I mean, I get sushi all the time from like multiple different restaurants. I just love sushi. Love sushi. So that's another one.
Good call. We love.
Wabi in Venice to get sushi. I think that's such a vibe. I'll do a lot of West Side restaurants because I've been a West Side girl since I moved here and I will never be anything but.
Okay. No I. No love for the IE.
Nah, I'll stay by the ocean. If I was gonna live in the city, I might as well be in New York City.
Right. All right. Favorite event that you've ever attended? And I'm talking about like for the vibes. For the vibes.
Vibes. Ronnie 2K had a really good event in All Star a couple years ago. That was fun. Let me think. What else had really good vibes? I love Kenny Smith's party.
Yeah, I'll start again.
Love it. It's a poker game, and everyone makes fun of me that I love it so much because a lot of old heads, like they're like the people that like I grew up watching. So, like you always see like Vince Carter, Sean Marion, like everyone's just kicking it. Meta's always playing poker, like and everyone's just having a good time. It's like I don't know. It's like the alumni club, but I freaking love being around it, and like it's just such good vibes. That's a fun event. D-Wade Spades, always a fun event during All-Star. I really enjoy that one as well. I like the card game, cool, just kick it, a little bit more intimate vibes.
Now, do you play? You ever get on the spades table, the purple table?
I'm learning.
Okay.
Poker, yes. I'm learning spades. my best friend's black. She told me not to get involved. She said I better just stay out of it. And if I do get involved, I better know what the fuck I'm doing. So
Get real serious at that spades table. Don't jump out there.
She's a DC girl, and she's like, sweetie, like I love you, and I know because you play basketball, you think you like got a little swag, but spades is a whole different situation.
Oh yeah.
It's not like, hey, sit at the table, we'll all teach you nicely.
Oh no.
No, it's aggressive. It's competitive. Like people, she's like, people lose friendships, people lose family members. Like, don't just go into that lightly. So I'm
Oh
gonna
yeah.
respect the game. And if I do go in, it'll be after quite a bit of training. I'm trying to think of a brand event that I went to that I was just like, hey, this is really dope.
Yeah.
Fast Switch with Gatorade. We just did a football game at SoFi Stadium. And I thought it was really cool because there wasn't that many people there. And it was just so fun. Like the kid in me is like, I'm just running around SoFi Stadium catching basketball or catching footballs from old quarterbacks in the NFL. Like, this is fun.
That's tough. I think I saw
Yeah.
that on your Instagram, matter of fact. Running
Yeah, but
around.
I was like, that's just a cool thing. Like, this is my life. Like, that's to me, like, that's really fun.
Heck yeah. That's
I
awesome.
like love that. Yeah. And I like some celebrity games can be really fun to play in too. Cause oh, so when I first moved to LA, shout out Erica. That's her name. Have you ever watched Love and Basketball?
Yes.
Okay, so she plays Sidra, which is like the antagonist of basketball. So
Yeah.
when I first moved to LA, literally my first week, I played against her. Like she was playing defense on me. And like she didn't know. I'm like, I'm living my love basketball dreams. Like this is so fun. But like she's like a real human that I'm absolutely friends with. But just as a fan of the game, that was a cool moment.
That's tough. That's
Yeah.
a moment. What you think? What you say? I don't pass the freshman or something like
Yeah.
that.
Don't let a freshman take your spot. But yeah, that's
Oh,
like,
yep. That's the line. That's the line. That's the line.
yeah. So
Something like
like
that.
that, like little stuff like that, I can't really hate on LA because you'll have moments like that and you're like, oh, that's actually cool.
Yeah.
Or you'll have moments where you meet one of your actors from your favorite like TV movies or shows and you're like, wow, he's a total creep. Now I can't watch this anymore. So, but yeah, like that shit doesn't happen in Philly. I'll just say that.
Yeah. LA is, I've seen a bunch of people out there. I'm like, just casually though, super casual. It's wild. It's fun though. It's fun though. It's fun.
Yeah. I mean, again, there's good and bad in everything, but I've made a conscious decision to focus on the good.
Oh yeah.
Because as much shit as that, like as much shit as I went through to get where I am, there's so many really cool, good moments and good people that I met, and I'm solely focusing on that.
Amen to that. I think that's the perfect way to end it off.
Yeah.
So the last question we always ask our guests is, who
I
should we
know.
have next on the What's in Your Bag podcast? But whoever you say, you got to get in your point guard bag and give us the assist, and help us get them on the show.
I was so Jody did to me.
Yes.
Dang. Keys. She has the best story ever, and I'll let her tell it. But I always, as I'm people who I like, who I like really admire, I'm so good at talking them up. But she has one of the coolest stories. She was literally at UPenn for law school, which is one of the hardest schools to get in general, let alone law school, studying to be a lawyer. And then I think COVID just shifted a lot of mindsets, but she is now the resident photographer for the Nets. She does Sixers. She's Jaime's personal photographer. She is one of the coolest, smartest, dopest human beings I've ever been around. And I'm so grateful to call her friend. And we're getting her on the podcast.
Love it. Is this you said Jaime Jaquez?
Yeah,
Tough,
from the Heat.
tough, tough, tough. All right, cool. We gotta make that happen for sure, man. We would definitely love to have him on.
She is, yeah, she's literally the coolest.
Bet. So we'll be in touch. We'll be in touch about making that happen. But
Sounds good. Thank you so much. And I appreciate you giving a spotlight to women. I think that's dope of you and keep it moving.
no, yes, for sure. I think definitely want to thank you for taking time out of your rest day to come on the show. I definitely want to take your
I
time.
know. I feel so bad.
No,
Persistence though. Persistence.
gotta be.
There's
You
gonna be
gotta be.
one lucky woman with this guy sometime because persistence is his middle name. He'll get it done.
Ooh, say it again. One day, one lucky woman. You know what I
He is not going to give up.
Never, never. Oh man, no, but this has been super fun, super awesome. And see, because we both share a love for Jody, I know I'll be seeing you a bunch in LA, really, really soon. So definitely look forward to
For
that.
sure. Hold on. I'm getting a FaceTime. It's okay, though, that I answer because she's a basketball girl. Babe, I'm on this interview for basketball. You can say hi. You're now live.
We are live on the Back
This
podcast.
is Chelsea, aka Bald Barbie. You'll have to have her on one day too. She's amazing.
See, I should know who that is too, Jody.
That's why I haven't texted you back. Are you on your way? We're about to go on a beach walk and mental health beach walk.
Of that.
Say bye to
Bye. love that. Nah, but this has been awesome. I'm definitely, like I said, we'll stay in touch for sure because I gotta get the cheesesteak when I pull up to Philly. You know.
Yeah, let me know. I mean, hey, if you ever want to come to the Philly game when I'm down there is no one, you can ask Jody, she will back this up. There is no better time to be had in the NBA except with me at a Sixers game.
You know what? I'm gonna
I'll
hit you
say that
up.
right now.
I actually might gotta make that happen before I get up out of here. So I'm gonna text.
I got you. My dad, I was talking to my dad today and I was like, Dad, I have to come to Philly next week for some Philly stuff. And he was like baseball? I'm like, Dad, baseball doesn't exist in my vocabulary. You know that. Like, and he's like, no, like the Phillies. I'm like, when I say Philly, Dad, I mean Sixers. And you know this. Like, baseball doesn't, that's not even a thought in my head.
I love that. Oh, for sure. We're gonna make it happen then. We're gonna make it happen sooner rather than later. Yeah. But
Yeah.
all right, guys, this has been another episode of the What's in Your Bag podcast presented by Bet Online. As always, like, comment, share, subscribe to the channel, man. It goes a long, long way. This is going to be my guy, Pull Up Tay, on the outro. Until next time, folks, peace.
Peace.
Suave.
Suave. Suave. Suave.
I've been in my bag for a while, I'm invincible. Story of a young boss, grinding shit critical. Calling on my bros one time, cause you special. I had some hood dreams of right rounds for my mentor. Every target that I shoot is on point like a pencil. Different route, changed relationships, I'm so sorry. Came up from the trenches and I made it, I say hardly. Now.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.